What's up, all you lifers out there? Welcome to another episode of Lifers Podcast Network, Two Gloves and a Dub, with two of your three co-hosts, Mr. Josh Kohea, Mr. Tony Clark. We're on episode 15. We have a little bit to unpack here. We have new merch available on the website. We're very excited about. Please give some love for lifers. How you feeling, guys? What's going on?
Feeling good. Thank you for giving me the Brazilian introduction.
Kohea.
Kohea. Kohea. I'm definitely mad Puerto Rican, but I'll take it.
Korea. You got it.
Korea. That works too. Sure. Better than Korean. Korea. Like the Korea.
Clark. Conlon.
Can't put that one up at all. There's no excuse. Feel good, man. Doing good. We got some decent fights this past. Did you guys check out the Bellator too? I think I saw one, which was the no contest, or was that at UCF or UCF UFC? I think Bellator had a no contest where a guy.
I watched Archuleta.
No, so on
yeah,
Friday,
they did. Yeah, they did have a low blow
on Friday. Well. Yes, on Friday, and it was I remember because Josh Thompson was talking about how these fighters need to be wearing metal cups and not whatever.
The tie cups. You got to get the tie cups.
Yeah. And because this guy hit him with the knee. I mean, the knee was vicious. Like it was.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. Ooh. It was tough.
And this guy.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay, so it was Raymond Daniels and Peter Cetong.
Yes.
Stonic. Raymond Daniels hit him with a spinning kick from hell to his balls. It was so terrible. It was so, like, man started crying in cage.
Oh, that was the second guy, though.
Oh, you're talking about the knee in the beginning. There was another guy who got a knee.
Yes.
And then Peter Cetong got spinning back, kicked into the balls.
The guy that got the knee, they ruled it a no contest because they didn't make it to the second round. So they didn't finish.
Yeah, I think
Peter
Raymond Daniels was no contest as well, right?
Was it? I don't know. I saw that, but I didn't see it.
There's no way that wasn't a no contest.
That's great. Two no contests, and both because of low blows.
Let's see if I can find it real quick.
We have, I don't know where you guys want to unpack all of this, but we have two back-to-back Bellator nights, Friday and Saturday. I love how they do that. But a lot of fights that happen in between, you guys would like to cover.
We can talk about the main cards, I suppose, right?
Yeah. Let's go Bellator. Let's go Bellator 245, which is September 11th, you know, a legendary day 2 days ago. Big monumental day in our history of America. But a few fights. Taylor Johnson defeated Ed Ruth. You know, Ed Ruth is
a huge win for Taylor Johnson.
With a heel hook, too. And if you know me, I love my heel hooks in and outside of MMA. So I was really, really surprised about that.
Yeah, it seemed it just seemed like he got caught, right? Like he kind of had like a mental error and just left himself vulnerable because it looked like he was like he had him down. No, did he initiate the takedown or did he drop him? I thought he had like taken him down and then in the midst of him kind of ground and pounding, Taylor was able to kind of get his leg.
It was quick. The fight was under a minute. You know, it happened in like 50 seconds.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, it was a takedown. But
yeah. That would make sense that he was shot and then scrambled, got out scrambled.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it stinks for Ed Ruth, but I mean, he's one of those guys. Just with his name, he's gonna be fine, right? He'll get another fight with the name attached to it.
Kevin Lee's brother got a victory at Bellator.
Saw that.
Keith Lee.
Yep. Is that really his brother?
Yeah.
Big brother?
Kevin was in his
little
corner.
Brother.
Little brother.
Vinicius Zani via unanimous decision. Leslie Smith, was this her debut at Bellator? I'm not sure.
I think so.
She got a win over Amanda Bell as well, unanimous decision. And then we got to the Raymond Daniels spinning kick from hell to the balls.
Oh, God. That's all from Friday night, I believe, right?
Yeah, all Friday.
Friday night. And then Kat Zingano came back. That's huge. Yeah.
Was that Friday?
I think that was her promotional debut.
Yep.
Yes. Promotional debut for Kat Zingano. She defeated Gabrielle Holloway via unanimous decision.
I don't know much about her.
I don't know much about Gabrielle Holloway, but Kat looked pretty good. Obviously, she's been out for, it feels like, a while. So it's going to be some rust when you come back. We had the upset of Taylor Johnson defeating Ed Ruth. I don't know if it's an upset just because Ed Ruth is young in the sport.
Of course it was.
I know. I'm just saying, like he's still a prospect. So
true.
I don't know. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you guys would view it. But yeah. He defeated Ed Ruth in what I guess I would consider an upset via unanimous via submission. Heel hook, round one, in just 59 seconds.
That's a big deal, man. Heel hooks in MMA are rare.
Right.
And it takes obviously there's a big skill differential. I mean, just honestly, leg locks are completely opposite. Like, they're a completely different form of jiu-jitsu. Now, you could be a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but a white belt in leg locks. Like, that's a real thing.
Because a lot of people don't allow leg locks, right?
A lot of
tournaments, a lot of different places don't allow leg locks, right?
They do. It depends on your division. But I think it's blue belt and above. And then even certain tournaments don't let you reap the knee, which is like bend it a certain way. But you'll see it, like, and then in the Taylor Johnson, Ed Ruth highlight, is definitely reaping. And that's where, like, ACL, MCL, you know, meniscus, all of that can get torn. Yeah.
And then in the main event, we had Phil Davis defeating Lyoto Machida via split decision. Tough.
I tried to stay up. I really tried to stay
up. It was a toughie. It was, you didn't miss it. It was a toughie.
Yeah.
But I thought Phil Davis was going to beat Lyoto in the beginning anyway. And it was, I don't even want to say it was a close fight because it was so, like, but it was, yeah, I guess it was a close fight.
There was little to no action, I heard.
Yeah.
I literally did fall asleep trying to stay up for it. Like, I didn't have it in me.
Damn.
But we also had another Bellator on the next night as well. Bellator 246, headlined by Juan Archuleta and Patchy Nix. Yeah.
It was like, 24-3 against 13-0. It's a very high level fight.
Oh, for sure. Patchy looked good on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
His grappling was very well, very, very good. He could control him well, but he wasn't able to really lock anything in, it felt like. And obviously, Juan Archuleta, he's just, to me, he's like very, I love watching Juan fight. Obviously,
very
he trains with TJ Dillashaw in their camp. But I always love watching Juan fight. But I don't think I'd ever seen Patchy Nix fight before. So it was a nice fight to me by him as well.
Now, did Juan just fight? I felt like he just fought not that long ago, no?
Not too long
ago. He fought Caldwell or no? What was his last fight?
Is it the 145 tournament or did that get canceled?
I don't know.
I was really excited about that.
Because I could have sworn he fought not that long ago. Like,
we can look it up.
I'm trying to see here.
Archuleta has got a crazy good record in MMA.
Well, 100%.
So respectable.
Yeah, he's 25-2, the guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, is it two or three?
He's 25-2, it says on their website.
Ah.
On the Bellator website.
Yeah,
maybe I'm bugging.
You know they don't really update that much. It's okay. Anderson Silva on there. That's probably true, though. Yeah, two. I don't know if it was two or three.
I think I might have been mistaken. Maybe I was thinking of Benavidez. But I mean, good. Good show to him.
I just wanted to run through the rest of the main card. We had Neiman Gracie defeating John Finch via submission. John
Crazy.
Finch retired afterwards.
Okay.
John Finch has had a long career. I did feel like he was towards his,
the back end.
Yeah. But hopefully, he's invested his money well. I know he's coached in a lot of stuff and I think
he was high level for a long time.
Right. I was trying to think of how to describe
him. Boring.
John Finch and Jake Shields always were two people that I always tied together because they fought basically the same.
Lay and pray.
It's a very 2010 style of fighting.
It's a Ben Askren style of fighting. They're the last of a breed. No one really does.
They had better hands, I feel like, than Ben Askren.
Of course, for sure. You have better hands than Ben Askren.
Yeah. But I mean, look at Fitch's record. 31-8-2.
It's not bad.
That's a pretty damn strong record. considering how
did
long
he ever become a champion in a major organization? Was it PFL? No. Did I make that up? No.
Oh, no. Maybe like RFA way back in the day or something. I don't know. Yeah. But
I mean, he's definitely a good guy. He had a lot of fights.
Yep.
Yeah, he's one of Sheppy's favorites. So like every time he lost, I got to rub it in, you know.
we had Liz Carmouche defeating Deanna Bennett via submission rear naked choke in round three.
The one girl that almost rear naked choked Ronda. That's what she always beat me.
Who, Deanna Bennett or Liz Carmouche?
Carmouche.
I don't remember that fight at all. Mm-mm. I'm not gonna lie to you. Didn't even know that fight existed.
Where she was on a tear doing all the arm bars.
You mean Ronda Rousey?
That's what I said. I was like, this is the girl that almost submitted.
I thought you said Amanda Nunes.
No, he said Ronda.
Okay. I don't know why I heard Amanda Nunes. I apologize.
She's the best.
Shut up.
Shut up.
She did almost finish her for real. And then we had Keone Diggs defeating Derek Campos via
the big win.
Naked choke as well. That's a huge win for Keone Diggs because Derek Campos has been a pretty well-rounded staple for Bellator for a while. Okay. Good fighter, good power.
Is he? It says his weight here is 145. Is he normally a featherweight and he just came
Campos?
Up for this fight? Yeah.
Yes, he's normally a featherweight. He was in the featherweight tournament, I believe. We want to move on to UFC?
Yeah.
I think we covered everything. Bellator,
yeah, everything Bellator wise.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Yeah, few undercards, some prospects, but we got to get into this juicy card last night.
UFC Vegas 10 last night. I'm just gonna start from the bottom and work our way up. Yeah. I'll speed past the ones that I feel like we should speed past, and then we'll stop on the ones that I feel like we should highlight.
Let's do it.
In the first fight of the night, oh no, come back. We had Sabina Mazo defeating Justine Kish via rear naked choke, fighting at a Kings MMA. I know this because my friend just always talks about her because he trains with her. And I mean, I believe Sabina is mostly known as a kickboxer, so for her to get a submission over like a vet in Kish is you know pretty good in her. Then we had Brian Barberina defeating Anthony Ivey via unanimous decision.
Barberina's tough. Very underrated. Yeah.
Barberina?
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. He's definitely...
He beat up Sage?
Yeah.
Nice. I want to beat up Sage one day.
One of the fights I wanted to highlight was Jalen Turner defeating Brock Weaver via submission. Renekah choke in round two.
That sounds familiar.
The Tarantula.
Is that your Man boy?
That's my boy, Jalen Turner. He was holding a spider. Yeah. He did.
Good fight.
He was holding a spider at the weigh-ins like a psychopath. The whole
not a real spider.
Yeah, tarantula in his hand. He had it like cupped, and then when they weighed him, he like steps up and then he like opens his hands and he has like the whole tarantula in his hand. It was terrifying. I was like,
Brock shit his pants right there.
I don't know. Like him and Brock. Obviously, they had a little bit of heat coming in because he had already fought Roosevelt Roberts, which is Jalen Turner's like diehard friend and partner.
He fought last night.
Yeah, he also fought as well. But Jalen Turner's hands just looked amazing, like legit. Like I love watching him strike. It's very clean, very crisp. Not a lot of wasted effort. He did take the fight on 2 days' notice, though he had already had a full training camp. Because he was supposed to fight the week previous, but his opponent pulled out due to COVID. So he stepped in on this fight short notice, technically. But he looked good, and then when he took him to the ground, he submitted him, you know, pretty handily.
It looked like he knocked him out. What was it, the second round?
Yeah, I think it was the first round he hurt him, and then the second round he finished him.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
And I like that the beef was squashed at the end, and then they put the camera on both of them, let them talk about the rounds. That was kind of cool because traditionally, like, it's way too loud, and you don't get that much time to be like, dude, you got me in the second round. I thought you were turning up the pace, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was really cool. I'm not told on Brock Weaver, though.
I'm not going to lie. I had one of my friends, he was mentioning me before. He's super sold on Brock Weaver. And I was like, I just haven't seen it. I don't know what you saw that would have made you – you know, so sure of him, but
yeah,
I thought.
Sorry to cut you off, but I always miss when like because Philly like is trained with him, and like people come by like Fusion, and then usually I'm like not there when people are. You know, like I've caught a few people in passing, like Ponzinibbio and Henan Barao, you know, Jacare. Yeah, so like I've seen a few of them in the gym, but like Masvidal was there last year. You know, there's just like there's a whole plethora of people that like I haven't been able to like physically see or take a picture or train with. I'm like, damn, you know. And I guess Brock was there recently, and I didn't see it, but it is what it is. I mean, I don't know much about him. I've never felt him. All I saw was his contender fight, and I know that he's fought for Island fights, and it wasn't a bad contender fight, but I wasn't sold on him then, and I think his speech just gave him more hype than he needed to have.
I agree.
Cool speech, but, like, he's been taking forever to fight since that speech, I guess.
Yeah, and he hasn't done anything so far since he's been in my opinion. But neither here nor there. On to the next fight, we had Alexander Romanov defeating Roque Martinez.
Yeah.
If I'm saying that right, via submission arm triangle choke.
Yeah, he dominated him though.
He just wrestled the shit out of him. Had a Russian cut going on, right?
No, he had a regular haircut.
Okay, I'm thinking about another guy.
Yeah, he just wrestled them the whole time, and really, and he was able to take him down with ease. And it seemed like Martinez had nothing for the ground game. He just didn't know. He didn't know how to move. He just didn't know how to escape. He didn't know how to get back up properly. And this guy was just, bro, you would hear the hammer fist that Romanov was dropping on this man. And it sounded just dirty. Like, there was a couple times I'm like, this guy's defending himself, but he's helpless. Like, there's nothing. Right. Besides surviving, him being maybe in a crucifix, like, that would have probably closed it out.
Surviving and actually doing something off your back are two different things.
Like, legit.
He's just not dead yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, good showing for Romanov. I mean, he just destroyed this dude.
Then we had a UFC debut for Kevin Kroom. I believe he's coming off the Contender Series as well, if I'm remembering.
Moving up a weight class as well.
Defeating, as we talked about earlier, Roosevelt Roberts via submission guillotine choke. What'd you say?
Hot prospect as well.
Yeah. What do you guys have to say about Kroom?
I mean,
31 seconds, man. That's crazy.
He was a 3-1 underdog to Roberts, and Roberts, I think he's on a 2-fight win streak with chokes as well.
Yeah, no, I love watching Roberts fight.
Roberts has been killing the game.
Yeah.
It just seemed unfortunate. I mean, he just got caught, man. It just seemed like he hit. I mean, mind you, he hit him with that. I believe it was like an overhand right, cracked him good, like cracked him. Good, or maybe it was left. I'm sorry, but he got him right on the button, and you could tell he was kind of recovering and went to shoot, and he just caught him with that standing guillotine.
Like a panic, maybe like a bit of a panic shot.
So I mean, you know, luckily he didn't take too much damage. So I mean, I'm sure he'll be back, and it'll be a learning experience for him. But good for Kevin Kroom that just kind of, I mean, he was you saw him light up, like clearly a lot of fighters.
I saw a lot of people. Like congratulating him afterwards.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people were happy for him. I'm not sure what his background is
I don't know.
I didn't know too much about him. I just looked him up a little bit. Looked up who he's fought. He's fought Gaethje. Lost to Gaethje. He had triple the amount of fights as Roberts. So I guess the experience plays a factor.
Oh, 100%.
But that opportunity was created because one of my old teammates and training partners, Matt Favola, had to pull out. He broke his foot. The last sparring session, the last round, on a check kick.
Oh,
that's tough.
Can't imagine how hard he threw that kick, to be honest.
Hell yeah.
Hard enough, I guess.
Well, I mean, and just going on fights alone, right? Roosevelt Roberts now has 13 with that loss, right? He's 10-3. Kevin Kroom is 22-12. So
four-fight win streak.
Yeah, it's not even close on.
Yeah,
he had an 11-year career, and he finally got in UFC. That's just got a long. You know, that's just crazy.
Well, that would make sense why people were so happy for him then.
Of course,
because he's been fighting
like
for
a long
so
time
long.
Coming thing.
For sure. All right, and then we move on to Julia Avila and Ciara Eubanks.
Ciara.
Ciara won via unanimous decision over Julia Avila.
It was a war, man.
It was a pretty good fight. Avila looked raging panda. She looked good in the feet in the first round, but I think it was in the second round, Sajar took her down and really had her way with her, honestly. Like, she was really controlling and beating her up. And then in the third round, it's pretty much, you know, like, let's get her back down instead of just trying to strike with her. Because Julia, she had a mean jab, very educated. She was staying with it, staying strong, and popping her head back every time she hit her with it. Good fight, though, by the ladies. On to the main card, though. We had your boy, Mike, or Alon's boy.
Alon's boy, they started MMA around the same time. Used to be teammates.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
At one point. Billy Q, amazing fighter. Used to be my coach at one point as well. So I've had a little bit of connection there. You know, I won my first amateur title with him as my head coach. Great guy. Great guy. Great fighter. Freaking on a tear right now. What, 8 straight wins? And that was it was a proven dog fight. Like, Kyle Nelson's no scrub. 13-3. You know, he's been in the UFC a little bit longer. So that was a huge win. And I think Billy Q's making a name for himself, you know. And I just remember him in Tampa. He was such a hard worker. He was always waking up extra early to get in extra reps and just doing things that the people didn't want to do. So it's cool to see it kind of culminate for him, you know.
And Kyle Nelson was game. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Josh.
No. Go ahead.
Kyle Nelson was game. Like, he was digging to the body on some nice shots. Like, I mean, it was a good fight. Like, neither one of them was going to go down easy for sure. That was just fantastic fight.
For sure. I mean, and it goes to show, kind of similar to like when Billy fought Spike a little bit. I felt like it was just a matter of time. Like, he just kind of had to kind of wade through whatever flurry his opponent was going to kind of bring in. Even though Kyle Nelson wasn't as aggressive as Spike was, I think Spike was kind of a guy that, like, after the first round, he was gassed. Kyle was a little bit more, it seemed like he had a little bit more in the tank. He just unfortunately, that second round, man, got cracked right in that orbital and immediately dropped. But good for Billy to set up that right, man, because he was throwing it a lot, man. And he was actually throwing like some of these looping hooks, like fastballs, bro. Like, I was like, man, this dude's trying to just destroy this motherfucker. Dang. And then and what's crazy is he doesn't look like he carries that much power, right? And he even said it himself. He's like, I don't have knockout power. I don't have knockout power. Kind of like the Izzy thing. But you could see just he knew just kind of the shots that he knew he had to pick. In the first round, he was throwing a few, like, just kind of looping haymakers that just weren't landing. But it seemed like he kind of settled himself at the end of the round and then come into the second round and just dropped him. I mean, that knockout was fantastic. It made it to the top
ESPN
top of the day. On ESPN.
He made it number 6.
Number
ESPN's
6, yeah.
Top play of the day.
Jeez.
So shout out to Billy Q.
It was a third round stoppage, I believe.
Second.
Corntillo.
Third round. You're right.
And I saw a lot of the same patterns. I mean, I feel like he's just so durable and so, like, he's such great cardio. So, I mean, he may not start off the fastest, and some fighters are like that. You know, I know a few fighters that are like that. But, he really turns up the pace as the fight goes on, and people can't keep up with it.
A little Neil Magny, would you say?
Neil Magny. My boy Phil likes to start slow as well.
Yeah.
He calls himself a slow starter. I mean, Cerrone's a slow starter. There's a few people who are out there. I'd say Ferguson's a slow starter as well.
I would agree with that. He's more of a death by a thousand cuts, so it's going to be a minute.
I mean, it's weird, though, because it's kind of the same, right? A little bit, I guess, with Billy, with Tony, where you see these shots that they're landing, and it doesn't look like they're power shots. It doesn't look like it's not doing that much damage. But Tony, granted, Tony has humongous hands. I don't know about Billy, but Tony has humongous hands. So you'll see, like, the damage. These guys might hit him 10 times, but he hits them once or twice, and it's just the damage.
He starts to catch up quick.
Oh, my gosh.
But I noticed, like, a lot of similarities. And it was funny because I was watching this with Sheppy. We were sitting at a bar, and I just put it on my phone, you know, because we didn't have ESPN Plus at the bar.
Yeah.
I promised they would. It made no sense. Everyone should be with it by now. Anyways, yeah. But I had it on my phone. We were watching, and I was just like, dude, he's really turning it up. You know, close first round. Second round, you can see Kyle Nelson start to slow down. It's just like his contender series fight. Same exact thing. The guy started off really hot, got the better of Billy. And then the second round, the tides start to change. And then in the third round, just like his contender series fight to get into the UFC, the first 20, 30 seconds, he puts it on him, knocks him out. Same exact thing. So it was cool to like I was telling Chevy, I'm like, dude, it's, you know, he might just pour it on going into this round. Cause he was really like towards the end of the round, he was really beating up Nelson. And then the first 9 seconds, jab, 1-2. Boom.
Yep.
Poor guy. If you ever face plant like that, that's so embarrassing.
100%. Oh my god.
But a great, great fight. You know, 3-0 in the UFC. Happy for him, you know.
Hopefully he keeps the wave going. I want to see him fight some big names so he can keep the momentum going for himself.
All right, on to the next. We have Bobby Green defeating Alon Patrick via unanimous decision. This is Alon Patrick's return since 2018 due to injuries and a bunch of other stuff that happened to him. Okay. But he was looking kind of wild out there, like pretty aggressive. Like he really was like kind of swinging a little bit wild. Mm-hmm. Bobby Green, man, I could watch him just do like head movement, like little slips. It's just little slips that he rolls the shoulder and shit. It was very, very nice to watch. He does not panic under fire.
It might be a second coming for his career.
Honestly, mm-hmm. I think he looked really good. I know he's going to want, a more notable name after this. But it was a fantastic fight for him. His striking looked good. His defense was there. And everything. He just kind of won all the rounds, in my opinion. I don't think he lost a round.
Yeah, the swag he had was just on another level. And 100%. He knew he was landing. He was mm-hmm. landing, man. This guy was missing, and he wasn't. And he just knew. He's like, this kid can't touch me, so I'm not worried about it at this point. I mean, the guy right now, he's on a 3-fight win streak. He beat Clay, Venata, and now Patrick. So. Yeah.
And that's like varying levels of guys, like a vet, a younger guy. You know what I mean? Like, but he's definitely doing his thing now. He's starting to like build some steam up. I'm happy for him. You know, he's been in the game a long time too. It's always nice to see some of these vets like start to try to hit a resurrection, if you will. Yeah. On to this next fight.
Really quick before you transition, I think very highly of Alon Patrick. Yeah. He's one of my teammates. He's one of he's one of Jacques Ray's boys as well. He didn't come to the gym for this, in preparation for this camp. You know, Jacques has his coach from Brazil living in with him, and they're training at, you know, his garage. So not necessarily all the looks, I guess, they're used to getting. But, I still think he's a very explosive fighter.
100%. He was swinging for the fences. Like, when he was swinging, it was just – Bobby was just, like, ready – you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, coming back from a 2-year layoff, COVID training is different. You know, it's tough. Like, it's going to be tough to come back versus somebody, you know, so defensively sound. Like, if he fought, like, another wild fighter or something like that, maybe it would be different. But,
And again, luckily for him.
Short notice, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Both? I think so. Yep, for both.
I think Green had somebody else, right?
I think they – didn't they – did they not both have somebody else?
I don't know. Yeah.
They just kind of made it happen. I mean, either way, Patrick most likely, I mean, he'll be able to bounce back, hopefully, from this.
100%,
He's only had 3 losses right now, so he'll be all right.
Still pretty young in the game. Sorry, I just wanted to touch on that.
You're good. Of course.
And then for the best fight of the night, honestly, probably hands down. Mr. Ed Oscar defeat Mike Rodriguez. Herman versus Mike
via Kimura in the third round, I guess, if you want to call that. Now, maybe I'm being biased, and I know I'm not supposed to be technically, but it didn't sit with me right, guys. Like, so you have Mike Rodriguez kind of dominating at Herman in the first round, out striking him, out kicking him to the body, kneeing him to the body, just looking clean. Coming into the second round, much of the same. Going towards the end of the second round, maybe there's a minute left, maybe a minute, some change left, I believe.
I think so,
Rodriguez hits him with 2 knees to the, I would call the stomach, and maybe, I believe Josh said earlier, maybe the solar plexus and or like right around the rib cage, under the rib cage, kind of side of the abdomen area. And Herman goes down. Herman goes down. Michael Rodriguez goes to swarm. Referee stops the fight. I was like, okay, maybe he's stopping the fight for the right reasons. And he calls it a low blow. And Ed Herman just starts like, he's not even shaking his cup. He's not even grabbing his balls to begin with. He's just getting up, looking, kind of looking around, realizing what the ref is stopping for. Then this man has the audacity to start shaking his cup out like he got hit and breathing hard. He stood up like, oh, is this what's happening? Bet. Oh, yeah, my balls. He got me. He got me. I can't breathe. And he walks around the cage for at least 2 minutes. Minimum.
Milking it.
I was going to say.
Milking it.
I thought he took the 5 minutes.
Oh, no, I'm being generous.
I think
he was walking forever, but I don't know how to gauge time while I'm angry.
I feel you. I wasn't paying attention, but it felt right. Like he
man's.
Took...
I'm going to say at least for sure 3.5 minutes, at least.
Yep, I'll agree.
Man walked around forever. Starts the round back. You know, they kind of end off with still Mike Rodriguez outstriking him still.
He dropped him again and was ready to, and want, you could tell he was just ready to
fucking finish
him. He just didn't have the time anymore.
Rolling into the third round. It's still all Mike Rodriguez, my opinion. Ed Herman goes to shoot on him. He sprawls it out. I forget how they ended up in this position, but it's almost like Herman was trying to shoot on him, like, but they were kind of leaning on the cage. And then Mike Rodriguez just starts punching him in the body, drops him again from body shots. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he's just trying to do anything to get the finish. So he's like hitting him all over the place. And technically, you have to credit Ed Herman for getting this submission. Locks in the Kimura, rolls him over. They roll around a little bit, ends up getting into a dominant position to lock out the Kimura and get in the submission. Yes, technically it was good, but I cannot accept it. I'm sorry. I was truly, truly upset by this. I thought he milked that foul.
For sure.
Everyone that I know thought. I made a post on it afterwards on Instagram, you know, asked the fans what they thought. Majority didn't like it. Like they were upset by it, but I'll say it was about 80-20, maybe 85-15, where there were some people that were supporting Ed Herman. Like, that's a vet move. That's like, if he did it to you, or if the referee was giving you that, you would have took it too. And I'm just like, I hear what you're saying, but I can't respect it. I'm sorry.
Think about it like this. Let's just say the ref gave, I was in a fight and the ref gave me time for a body shot. Mm-hmm. Am I gonna stop and be like, "Hey, man, no, let's just fight"? It wasn't to the body, right. Or it wasn't to the nuts. Like,
right.
I'm good. Let's go. Like, honestly, I mean, as a fighter, I mean, obviously, it's not the most respectable thing, but like, unless you're fighting and you know, there's a pay scale on the line. You know, you get double, mm-hmm. and it's your livelihood. You know, if I'm rocked and I can get time to recover, kind of like Yoel on the stool.
Yeah. So good.
And you know, I think they'll take that advantage. I think that's like a comparable thing.
I mean, you look at any sport for the most part. If there's some sort of, if you look at basketball, if you look at soccer, if you look at football, whenever there's a call, there's always going to be calls that are blown. And the person who's kind of being taken, who's able to take advantage of it, they're never going to say like, "Oh no, that's my fault." You know what I'm saying? So I mean, I get why Ed Herman did it, clearly, right? And most likely the reason why he took so damn long was because he was fucking about to get finished, yeah. and he really needed all that time to recover to make sure he was good. But it just sucked. It just sucked to see Mike Rodriguez, who's been kind of on a tear right now, and kind of having this steam, rightfully so, to kind of lose it because of a mistake from a ref, you know, and. And the ref, you know, it sucks because it's like the ref saw what he thinks he saw, right? He probably thought that maybe his foot hit his cut, whatever the case was. And obviously that's why he stopped it. It just sucks that, you know, for Mike to have to deal with what happened and especially to get finished by Ed Herman, which, like Tony said, I mean, props to Ed for being able to finish Mike Rodriguez and not get finished because he seemed hurt. It seemed like a lot of this fight. It seemed like Ed Herman still had some power. Like Mike Rodriguez definitely respected his power because some of those kind of clashes, like Mike was like, "All right, I need to just be smarter about this.
Stay at range, hit him in
exactly.
the body."
Exactly, and because he had his reach, I think was crazy too, in comparison. But it sucks. But I mean, I think you posted on something right via Ariel Helwani that he's Mike Rodriguez is still getting his purse.
Yes. Mike Rodriguez is getting his win purse still because Dana White. Dana White,
cool.
And again, I get everybody's perspective. Dana White wasn't necessarily mad at the Ed Herman either. It's more of a mistake on the ref's part. Yes, he capitalized on it as any vet would. You know, when you wanna fight, you wanna lose a fight. You're gonna tell somebody. And to Ed Herman's credit, it's not like he told the ref, "Hey, he hit me in the balls." Ref stopped it. Ref said, "Oh, he hit you in the balls."
Yep.
Ed Herman's like, "He hit me in the balls." Bet. All right. Yeah. He hit me in the balls.
How about in the interview, Michael Bisping legit asked him, like, "Hey, let's address the elephant in the room. You said, you know, what did you, what, you know, I forgot what he asked him, but he was like, yeah, I couldn't tell if I got hit in the balls or in the chest.
I just know it hurt.
I know it hurt. You know what I'm saying? I was like, all right, bro.
I'm gonna tell you right now. I know when I get hit.
Bro, I know when I get hit.
That shit chest, hurts. Bro. Yes, 100%. But I don't want to spend too much time on that. I finally got over it. It took me a while, and I know I shouldn't be mad about stuff like that because I get it.
Honestly, but if I think it would have been more egregious if Mike Rodriguez wouldn't have gotten his purse. I think the fact that Dana,
I'll give you that, to
give him that purse, and to realize that. You know, he would have had that win. He would have had a knockout win if it wasn't
100%.
For the rest of the mistakes. So it's kind of a win-win for both, right? Ed Herman gets a dub, gets his purse. Mike Rodriguez, although he gets an L, still gets his purse. So financially, you know, right? That's what you're doing it for. As well.
Yeah, everything I guess is right with the world at the end of the day.
Right, exactly.
That mistake, huh?
On to the next fight, we had Roxanne Modafferi versus Andrea Lee 2, I believe. They fought back in Invicta. Roxanne had defeated her then as well, if I'm not mistaken. She defeated her again last night via Roxy style of fighting. Hey, if you don't like it, get her out of there. You know what I mean?
True. I mean, Macy Barber had the chance, but now we have to keep seeing her win.
Yeah. Roxanne's a vet. You know, she's been fighting for a long time. She's a pioneer for women's MMA. Andrea Lee still a prospect to me. Like, I don't know. I won't call her a prospect, but she's still just like
relatively new. I mean, she's got 16 fights compared to 43 from Roxanne,
right. So. But in the sense of like she's a kickboxer with jiu-jitsu, but it still doesn't feel like she's found like what her thing is niche per se. Yet. Yeah. But on to the co-main event, it was a beautiful finish by Ottoman Atazar.
Oh my god, that was very quick too.
Defeating Kama Worthy via first round TKO. I would have called it a KO, but yes, right. So like I knew a little bit more about Kama Worthy only because I've seen more like his last two fights he's had than I have of Ottoman. Yeah, I mean, he starched him. There's nothing else you can say. Like, he went in there. He swung. He countered and he killed him. Like when he started hitting him, it was just all downhill. He
immediately for blood.
He was vicious with it. Like it was like what? Like maybe a 10-punch combo. Almost. Like he was throwing a lot. He threw a lot and just then eventually dropped. Yeah, like it was beautiful. Honestly,
and
I don't
he's
know.
Undefeated.
Yeah. I don't know him like that, but I'm about to.
Yeah,
like,
me neither.
Definitely gotta start paying attention.
I saw when he was coming out. Does he train with Ali Abdelaziz? I thought I saw him in his corner. Surprising.
It's possible, but I'm not sure because I know Ali trains with at a gym in California, I believe. But he trains with Barry.
Obviously, he goes to AKA obviously sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I believe he has his own gym as well.
Okay.
Because I think he has certain fighters that he manages. Obviously, that's one bread aspect. But I believe he has fighters that he actually coaches as
trains
well.
Trains. Okay.
Yeah. But so if this is one of his guys.
Yeah.
Shout out
beautiful
to him.
Finish. Beautiful finish by Ottoman. Like he, I can't wait to watch him fight again. tough night, tough for Karma. He
was very good.
Tried to get up. He tried to get up and contest it, and I'm just like, brother, I'm sorry for you, but ain't no contesting this one.
Nah, bro.
Then in the main event, I do want to talk to you guys about this because I felt this a bit controversial. Michelle Waterson defeating Angela Hill via split decision. I had Angela Hill winning the fight.
Majority of people did. Very close. I mean, I'm not upset close. With either.
I can appreciate Angela discussing what her weaknesses were for the in the fight, at least, because at least she can be self-aware, if you will, on what her issues were, unlike other fighters who, when they lose, they just say, I'm still undefeated. She understands.
Just one fighter.
She just says, she says that she knows where she, you know, her failings were. But I thought she won. I felt bad for her. Like, yes, Waterson took her down a few times and controlled her for a little bit, but I didn't think she was doing the same amount of damage that Hill was doing on the feet. I thought Hill was striking more. The most things that really Michelle was hitting her with was those karate, like, side kicks to the body and side kick to the head a few times.
Kind of point scoring.
Yeah, kind of point kicking. Like, I'm not, you know, like, trying to, like, bash on Michelle Waterson. Like, she's a vet. She's, you know, been around the game for a long time, too. I like Michelle. She's a nice girl as well. But I really did think that Angela Hill won that fight. And I thought, personally, not, like, dramatically, but I thought it was a little bit of a robbery because it just seems like Angela Hill just can't catch a split decision. Save her life.
I was kind of in and out of the fight. All the exchanges that I saw, though, it looked like Angela was kind of the one being kind of the aggressor.
Yeah,
looking at the stats here, though, total strikes, Michelle Waterson had 162 to Hill's 146. And from what I see here, which might be maybe what got it for Michelle, it seems like control wise, and I don't know if this is ground control, ring control, what control, the control aspect is when they kind of have this statistic. But Michelle was 4 minutes and 3 seconds, where Angela Hills was 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So
I'm sure some of that was ground, and some of that could have been walking her down too, because with the karate style, like I would say Waterson, though she is kind of a point karate style fighter, she isn't completely a back down point karate style fighter. She will press a bit, and Angela moves a lot, so it would leave space for Michelle to walk to her it looking like she's being walked down, if you will.
I got you.
Controlling the octagon.
Now, granted, a lot of the strikes that, like for instance, Michelle had 23 strikes towards the legs. Angela Hill only had 4. Right.
Right.
Head strikes. Angela had 82, Michelle only had 65. Right. And then body was very sub. Angela had 45, Michelle had 40. So, I mean, it seems pretty close. It looks like control-wise was probably the difference maker for whoever was the judge that favored it for Michelle Waterson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming, because that's the only very significant, because even with the total strikes, even though Michelle Waterson has more, a lot of that's going to be the leg strikes, and that's why she's going to have more total strikes. But it looks like maybe the control might have been exactly what Michelle needed to win that fight.
I'm going to pull up the fight metric real quick, just because I'm curious as to who landed more each round. I don't know if you have that pulled up or not.
No, unfortunately not.
Let me see real quick. It'll take just a second.
No, you're good. It's kind of unfortunate, but you know what sucks about these fights, though, is as good as it is for the women's division, right, that they can continuously highlight them, it just kind of sucks that it's still – we don't see any contender for – with this strawweight. So what, that's – strawweight is Whaley?
Yeah.
Right? It's like everyone's with these fighters, unfortunately.
To be honest,
no, I think Rose was fighter. And I know Joanna was.
We're discussing it right now. Right.
Yeah, they're working on that.
Yeah. So, I got the stats put up for the Waterson and Hill fight. So, first off, we had Michelle Waterson 1-for-18 on takedowns. So that would have dominated the control time as well, because she's
got a count.
Yeah. Welcoming in Alon Cruz.
I just left In-N-Out Burger, and I ordered my burger and my fries animal style, and they're not animal style.
So they finessed you. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's tough. That's tough. You didn't get that Thousand Island dressing on your French fries.
honestly, In-N-Out is overrated, man.
I don't want soggy French fries and soggy burgers.
You have to get everything. It has to be animal style. If you don't get it animal style, then
I did, and I thought it was trash. The fries were like meh. The burger was.
You really just threw some Thousand Island dressing on some chili cheese fries? Like, get out of here, bro.
Boba.
Respect the global though.
So back to Michelle Waterson and
favorite Daniel. UFC fighter.
I was just doing the stats round by round for Josh and Mike.
Okay.
So round one we had Angela Hill landing.
Yeah.
We had Angela Hill outstriking Michelle Waterson 30-27.
Okay.
Total strikes landed. Round two. We had Angela Hill outstriking Michelle Waterson 35-33 on strikes landed. Now, I will say this. On round three, you know, it does start to get overwhelming a little bit for Michelle Waterson. We have Michelle Waterson outstriking Angela Hill 36-18 in strikes landed. Mm-hmm. Now, though it is 36-18, only 13 of those strikes were significant compared to, of the 18 of Angela Hill strikes, 11 of those strikes were significant strikes. Mm-hmm. So, like, that percentage is, you know, obviously different. She did get a takedown that round. Well, that was the first time she got a takedown. The only takedown of all the 18 shots. Should someone win a fight because they shot a lot, even if they weren't getting takedowns? Does that count as control? Does that count
as something? It has to.
I don't feel like the defense does count for anything, honestly. I feel like if somebody's pressing somebody back, they call and get cage control, octagon control, and
even if you get a takedown, if you don't hold it, I mean, it should be just like a jiu-jitsu term. If you don't hold it for a certain amount of time, it shouldn't count for points.
Well, but I guess if you're pressing them backwards, it's still control, like octagon control, because you're pressing
the aggressor, right? Because, I mean, look at the who's that gentleman that trains with Sarah Longo as well, with Aljamain Davidovich?
Mareb Davishvili.
I mean, Dodson, you know, he took him down, but Dodson kept popping back up. He would take him down, but Dodson, you know, and he, it's not like he did damage.
Dodson's the first person who's ever been able to pop up from those takedowns. Like, Mareb is a lit monster on the ground.
And that's what he's kind of known for, right? But, I mean... Yeah. Clearly, that showed he was just the aggressor. He was the one pushing the pace.
Right.
He was the one seeking the action. And 100%. I guess, you know, I would assume that that counts for something in the judge's eyes, I would think.
All right, on to round four. We had Michelle Waterson outstriking Angela Hill 29-24. She went 0-5 on takedowns there. And then round five, we had Angela Hill outstriking Michelle Waterson 39-37. So I... Looking now, like, back at the stats, and not that stats tell the whole fight, but I can see...
More as a so judge, how, well, if you're thinking like how the judge
how
is
somebody would have
scoring
her,
it,
yeah,
then that's why.
But it's just tough because I as I was watching it, just damage wise, I thought Angela Hill all day. Like there was at one point where like just Waterson's face just leaking, and I just like, oh man, like this is tough on her. But she wasn't able to get her out of there. Michelle was able to start, you know, capitalizing on the things that she was doing. But yeah,
I'm sorry for all the listeners out there. I had to mute Alana because he's smashing in and out right now. But he's sign languaging to us. I can't help but fucking look at this guy. I agree, man. I was kind of in and out of the fight, watching it wise. But it seemed like Angela was. It seemed like she was the one with the power. And
right,
but I could power see
definitely
how
her side.
I could see how Michelle,
killing it.
It's like Stephen Thompson, just not as much power, obviously, and not as 100%. Good, but was scoring probably during that fight. Again, though, to me, it's kind of unconsequential. Like, to me, both of them aren't contenders, right? Like, no one sees them even beating Rose, most likely. Like, so, or Joanna. Like, who are they? What are they going to do?
This is what I told somebody yesterday. For just on Michelle Waterson's part, and I guess you could say that vice versa. If if Michelle Waterston can't beat up Angela Hill, she ain't gonna beat up Jessica Andrade. She ain't gonna beat up Rose Namajunas. She ain't gonna beat up Joanna. Obviously, they just fought. She ain't gonna beat up Waylay. She ain't gonna beat up Tatiana Suarez. Tatiana Suarez would have the best chance. Obviously, because she's injured, it's easy to, you know, kind of throw her to the wayside. But she is healing up. But her grappling is dominant. And if she gets a hold of Michelle's small. Like I was telling another friend yesterday as we were watching the fights, I just think Michelle needs to go back to Invicta and go back down to her natural weight class of Adam weight. Yes, that's messed up. Yes, she won't.
Where are you going to fight, though?
Invicta. She was Adam weight champion there. She's too small. Yeah. Now, obviously, it doesn't matter because she won. She won last night. And even if she is a smaller girl to a lot of other people, there's nothing else she can really do. So yeah. It's just tough because it's like, I know, like, obviously, Waterston wants to fight. She said she want anybody that get close to the title. And it's just like, you're ranked number 8. You just went split decision. You know, tough fight with rank 13. You're not going to move up in the rankings.
She's 12 on rankingmma.com, which is like gold.
I was looking at the UFC rankings, but that's fine too.
Pretty low. Yeah. I think Rebus would beat her up. I think, I don't know. Sparza's on a little bit of a tear. She's not the most exciting player in the world, but
Sparza's finna fight Rebus though, so that's
yeah. And Rebus about to beat her up. Yeah. And then Suarez is undefeated. You know. Three straight
so
wins.
Just out of curiosity, what would you do? Who would you have Michelle Waterston face?
You gotta go top 5, top 10, right?
Where's she at? She's ranked what? Isn't she ranked 8?
She was eighth last night for UFC's rankings.
So I mean, you would think somebody in the top 5, and you know, if you're her, you just train your ass off and fucking try to get that dub. But I don't think anybody. I can almost guarantee the next fight that she has, she's going to be an underdog in. If she's fighting a top 5 fighter, she's going to be the underdog. And I don't know if she was the underdog in this fight. I feel like she was. Favorite.
Well, she was on a 2-fight losing streak coming into this fight. Previous to that, she was on a 3-fight winning streak. So she is 4-2 in her last 6. Okay. And her last 2 losses were to Carla Esparza, former champion, and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, former champion. So I don't know where
that Rose already beat up, you know, majority of that division.
100%. And
didn't Rose choke out Hill to get into to win the Ultimate Fighter? Was that Hill?
Maybe. I don't know.
She did choke her out, but I can't remember if it was for that. She definitely did choke her out though, yeah. You know, I don't know what they do with Michelle. I don't know what they do with Angela. I know Angela got called out. Not called out, but Claudia Gadelha was talking shit to her after
that. Claudia hurt her.
Oh, jeez.
Because that was another fight that went to split decision that I believe
it was close.
Claudia won, and a lot of people thought Angela won that one as well. So Angela's, you know, kind of trying to already set up a next fight. Obviously, I don't know that Claudia would take that fight. Maybe she would, you know.
I mean, if she's talking that shit, you might as well.
Yeah.
She's so hot.
Yeah, she is. She's a baddie. She's a baddie.
Did I say that out loud? Sorry.
You did. Well, then.
Relax.
No regrets.
You know, it's out there for the internets to have forever now.
Good.
Once I release this episode.
Whenever Mr. Mighty's done eating, we'll have him recap his opinion on you know, a mutual friend and local fighter and Billy as well.
Billy Q, yeah. We need
we'll have to cover that in a little bit.
What's the next fight? Now is the Colby fight. That's
oh my god!
Yes,
fight next, my pants. I want to talk about this so much.
Yes, I need to talk about this.
Who else is on?
Pull up the whole card, though.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, pull up the card, please.
Before we do any of that, you know, quick shout out to my boy Randy Costa, who is fighting Jerry Newsom next week. The Zohan, the dude's a freaking stud. Really excited for his fight. That's his third fight in the UFC, and Dude, the dude's worked so hard, man. I'm really excited for his fight. You guys got to keep your eyes out for that.
Hell yeah. Good for your boy, man. That's big.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's undercard. He's fighting a guy with maybe double his experience. But I'm excited for him.
Bro, this fucking card is...
I already have it.
It's a stack for a fight night.
Do you have the whole card? I was trying to find the whole card.
I'm looking at it right now. So right, I'm looking at the hold up. It's just the main card, it looks like. Oh wait, no, I can look at the prelims.
I was trying to find the whole thing. Okay.
No, I got the prelims. So prelims are I guess this guy doesn't have a fighter anymore. It was Derek Minner versus nobody. It's a blank picture now.
Derek the coal miner.
Oh, is it Miner? Oh, that's
great name.
Andre Ewell versus Erwin Rivera.
Derek Minner's fighting TJ Laramie.
We have another
me in Vegas. That's my dog.
Short notice? Or no?
I don't know.
Like 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
Wait, who's your boy, Alon?
His name's TJ Laramie. He was on the Contender Series.
He's fine. Okay.
He beat that kid that was like 15-0 or 15-1 or something like that.
Ooh. Is he fighting?
Remember that kid that had to quit because his rib was like broken or whatever? He was in so much pain. He couldn't continue.
Oh,
that's TJ beat him. That's who he beat to get in the Contender Series or to get in the UFC.
Oh wow!
He's fighting Derek Minner.
Nice.
TJ's the boy.
So he's like legit boy. The first fight of the prelims too. He's opening the whole thing. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, they had Tyson Nam on there, but I believe Jerome Rivera got COVID. I'm not sure what happened there.
Tyson Nam's a savage, man.
Yeah, he's a veteran of the sport.
So then we got Journey Newsom versus Randy Costa.
Yeah, it's like
boy,
yeah,
boy.
He's super exciting, man. Super, super exciting. Big on head kicks, calls him foot uppercuts. he's charismatic, man. He's good. I just hope he continues the path that he's on, and then everyone will know his name, you know? And Alon knows him too.
Well, he's on a – I mean, what a great card for him to be on, not for nothing.
Oh, 100%.
Then there's Jessica Rose Clark versus Sarah Alpar.
Oh, super excited for that fight.
That's the bantamweight, women's bantamweight. Then we got Jordan Espinoza versus David Dvorak.
Dvorak.
Yep, flyweights. Then we have another flyweight bout in the women's division.
Tumaira.
Bueno Silva versus Mara Romero Borella. And then to cap off the prelims, we got Mirsad Bektik versus Luis Garagori.
I know Bektik. Bektik's a lot of fun to watch.
Bektik is a fire fight to watch anytime.
Featherweight.
So pretty decent prelims, to be honest. Yeah, I feel like
decent
that's
prelims. Exciting. Yeah. I will say this. It feels like they've thrown a lot of fights. It feels like it's going to be like a million hour fight card.
This one is
like,
pretty long.
They're probably making
up now. I know. The other card only had 7 fights, so it lost a lot of fights off of it. So I know they were going to like start booking other people on other cards. But it's a pretty deep card.
It gets even deeper. I mean,
oh, I know.
The name card's ridiculous. Every single fight, I'm pooping my pants over.
It's pay per view worthy. Honestly,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even the main event. The main event, I would watch if it was just like, hey, this is the only fight we're having tonight.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
I'd pay for that. I'd pay pay-per-view money for that fight.
So even leading into the main card now, then we have Kevin Holland and Darren Stewart.
I got Holland.
Firefight.
We got Mackenzie Dern versus Randa Marcos.
I don't think I can beat up her boyfriend or her husband. I'm not sure. I don't remember if he's a black belt or not. But if it came to brass tacks, I have nothing left.
You think she's
up.
Not married to a black belt, son? Come on. You know she's married to a black belt.
Then we got Johnny Walker. Mr. I hurt myself while doing a backflip versus Ryan Spann.
That should be Johnny Walker's comeback fight. I think he'll be fine.
That's a good fight.
It's a good fight. I won't flat out pick Walker, but it's a good fight.
That's sold on Spann.
If Walker wants to get back into title contention, he has to win. He can't.
He can't lose again.
As
I
say,
he's been wrestled.
He can't. As I say, I'm not sold on Spann. He's won like 7-8 straight. And I did see him fight live as well. I forgot about that, and he won.
Shit, nice.
So. Now to the real main event.
Right. Well, then we have Johnny Walker. Then we have Khamzat Chimaev.
He doesn't even have a picture yet.
The Wolf.
Gerald Meerschaert. I don't even know how to say his last name.
It's so crazy How much hype is behind Khamzat? He's 8-0. Gerald Merchant is 31-13. Like, crazy. Man has been has so many. Like, it's crazy. But you maul two guys in a row in like 8 days. This is what happens.
In two different divisions.
Two different weight classes.
I mean,
and this, again, this is at middleweight.
And Mirshart's even well.
Is
it? You're right. He's not even a middleweight. And like, he's Gerald's a welterweight technically.
He can do Gerald's both. Going
down. I know he can do both. Gerald's not going down. They're fighting at middleweight.
Yeah, that's not Gerald's last down. Weight. It said 205.
What? That don't sound right.
That's,
is that true?
No, that's what I'm looking on UFC right now.
On 185.
No, he's saying his last fight. 185, now, but even if here's what I say: even if he fought his last fight at 205, he's a 185er. He's not a.
He's definitely not a.
Like seven. Maybe it was a, like a short notice or something like that. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I mean,
he's no slouch, you know.
Gerald has the reach too.
He's a submission guy, so you're throwing him right in with like Gerald Meerschaert has 31 wins, 23 by submission, so. He's definitely
take me down if you want to, I guess.
I think Chimaev can bang though.
I've seen a few of his knockouts. Like, he's definitely not afraid to like throw the hands.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a superior grappling, you know, I feel like that's how it works.
Right.
You're not afraid to get taken down or you can control where the fight goes.
I'm curious to see how that fight turns out. I feel bad for Gerald that the UFC's already counting him out, but
you think so? Is there odds on this yet?
He's definitely not the favorite. Like, Khamzat definitely the favorite.
Yeah.
That being said, like, to Dana, not necessarily his credit or whatever, but he did say, like, it's not like we're against Gerald. It's just this dude wanted this. We said, here, see what you can do with it. If you can make something happen, that's fine. If you can't, then we'll know. Like, It's not really.
Let's be what? Real. Like, the prospects, because at this point...
Oh, for sure. I'm just saying what Dana said.
Chimaev's like a prospect at this point. So, logically, you'd fight someone who has around eight fights, you know, 8 to 12 fights, you know, maybe like a veteran who's on his way out. But, I didn't think, you know, Mirshart's on his way out. But, like, I imagine there's not a lot of people who are biting to fight Chimaev.
100%.
For sure.
I mean, that's the most gangster 10-day turnaround in the world, ever. In two different weight classes. And got punched twice in that span. He literally got striked twice.
You call your shot, right? And I mean, it either works for you or it doesn't. 100%. Sugar showed what happens when it doesn't. And
it's a good way to lose fans, I guess.
Right. Granted, Chimaev obviously isn't as eloquent with his words, doesn't have as much of the pizzazz to him as Sugar does, right?
But
he's clear. He's very straightforward about what his beliefs in himself. He says, I can take care of these guys. I can knock these guys out. These guys are easy to me. This is what I want. So let's see if he can deliver. I mean, it looks like obviously he's going to be the favorite. You know, we'll see if that's going to be the case. If Gerald has 23 finishes out of his 31 wins by submission, I'm curious to see if Khamzat ever takes it to the ground.
Now, and just to be clear... Sorry, I thought you
were... No, you're good. I was going to say, if he does and just smashes this pool and this guy's submission game means nothing, then I guess it goes to show that he's willing to get into someone else's kind of background or whatever their strong suit is and destroy them in whatever they're best at, I guess.
Gerald Meerschaert is 2-4 in his last 6 fights. So there's that. His last killer, two bro. Wins... I agree. Killers. I mean, fight Kevin. He fought
Kevin Holland, Jack Hermanson, Margo Santos. Yes,
I'll give you those. But he has lost via guillotine, and I won't say that Khamzat would guillotine him.
Hermanson. I'm sorry, Hermanson. Friggin'
yeah. His jiu-jitsu is a real deal.
If you hit a heel hook in MMA, you have a high level ground.
100%.
Straight up.
But I don't, you know, maybe they're disrespecting Meerschaert, but Meerschaert's 2-4. This is his way to save his, you know, he loses here, they probably just cut him, honestly.
He's a 13-year veteran. You know, he's been fighting for 13 years.
Yeah.
So I've noticed a lot of, especially during COVID times, you know, there's a lot of passing the torch, it seems like. Like, younger fighters just whooping up on the older fighters. So it's almost like a new era. A lot of our favorite fighters are retiring. Even though you can't take retirements that serious in MMA, it does seem like a lot of people are kind of sticking to it.
Yeah. Overall in the UFC, Mishart's 6-5. So we'll see. He needs this win, to say the least. Yeah.
He won't get it probably, but he needs it.
Let's just be honest. His biggest win in the UFC, or maybe in his career, is Trevin Giles, the guy that almost got submitted by a 55er and James Krause. Daron Wynn, I guess, is probably his biggest win if you don't want to pick one of those two. But he really doesn't have that high level win yet.
Right. I'll give you that.
I'm not saying that Chimaev is high level. We don't know yet, but we will. We'll know in a second.
If he gets through Gerald, then he's supposed to end up fighting Damian.
Fight Island. Yeah.
On Fight Island. That'll be his first, I think, credible.
And Maya doesn't do too well against wrestlers. Like high level wrestlers, he doesn't submit them. He submits everyone else.
I mean, technically, Ben Askren was a high level wrestler.
Yeah, I was about to say, technically, obviously he's old though.
I think
not a striking fight.
This is for me, right? Well, did you see when they were striking? That shit was hilarious in that fight.
You're a better striker than Askren.
I believe that. I could probably throw hands better than
crazy.
But I mean, I think we'll see. I think unfortunately, even though Maya would probably obviously that'll be the best name for Chimaev, it still won't mean anything because anybody anybody went through Maya. So it's cool. But
he's OG, man. He's been here forever.
Yeah. Well, and he's gonna fight Maya at 170, right? Not at 185.
Yeah,
man. Either one. I mean,
he's just fluctuating. He's doing whatever he wants. He's fluctuating. Whatever he wants.
Literally.
You want to fight me at 185? Let's get it. You want to fight me at 170? That's nothing.
Well, I mean, I just pulled this up for you guys. I mean, like you said, you have to beat Maya to get to the title. His last seven fights, let me just put it this way. Three of them were wins. He beat Lyman Good, Anthony Rocco Martin, and Ben Askren. Solid wins. But his four losses, Burns, Usman, Colby, and Tyrone. So to lose to the top four guys in the division.
No, yeah.
Didn't he beat Masvidal before that too?
He did. He beat Masvidal split decision. And Masvidal defended really well.
He did.
The winner of that, I think Masvidal would have fought Woodley for the title. If that was a title eliminator.
Not anymore because they're training apparently together. So
Now.
Yeah, now. Yeah, no, but back then?
Yeah, back then, no.
But let's finish then again, this card, though.
Teammates don't really matter at this point, right? Not 2020. Burns and Kamaru. There's a big pay scale. I think money kind of motivates people. Like a big difference between touching gold. You touch gold, you make money for a good amount of time.
I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see, man. I mean, it looks like they weren't like crazy training partners, like Jorge Masvidal
together, man. They're training partners. One guy's on another guy's shoulder. They're training partners. Masvidal
brought Colby from Oregon, right? Like, wasn't he had him live with him? He was like having him train with him for wrestling, and then little by little, once this kid was being dropped,
I'm talking Kamaru and Burns.
No, but what I'm saying is like in comparison to like what Kamaru Burns is to like what somebody like Masvidal Colby was. I don't know if they had that same closeness. I know he helped them. Yeah. I know Kamaru was there for some of that stuff, but in comparison to like what you saw with Colby and George.
Obviously they live together and stuff like that.
You know what I'm saying?
If I'm holding a lawn up on my shoulders and he has a belt in his hand, we're boys. We're best friends. Like that's like I'm sharing the same energy of him winning that belt.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking in my head, I'm gonna fucking take this kid's belt. You know what I'm saying? That's just weird to me. But that's the fight game. That's the fight game that we're in, you know? But it's just weird. That's just weird to me, man. There's certain people that I've trained with over the years, I'm just like, there's no way I'd fight. Even if we're not teammates anymore, like we're different schools, like there's no way. I mean, obviously he switches up on me, starts talking shit, and does stupid stuff, and disrespects me. It makes it easier. Okay, no friendship. Boom, you fight. But like just out of nowhere. I mean, I guess it's different, obviously, in the UFC and getting a title shot and this and that. You know?
Yeah.
But it's just weird to me. Long things are perfectly normal.
Well, hey, moving
everybody's
on.
Everybody's working towards the same thing.
The fight right after that, which is the co-main event, is Cowboy Donald Cerrone here.
Whose eyes going to swell larger?
Against Nico Price.
Yo, Nico's my dog.
That's a good fight. That's a good fight.
I got to go with Nico 100%.
Nico, I'm mad that the picture they got on UFC, though, has him with, like, the little Like
the little man bun thing.
It's not even a man bun though. It's like a little like palm tree.
No, it's like my hair is short and I'm just like
can't stand anybody who puts their hair like that, man.
His hair is a lot longer now though.
Right? Like give him an updated picture, my man. Shit. Yeah, that's gonna be a fucking fight. That's gonna be a fucking dog fight, I feel.
I think Nico's gonna knock him out.
I could see that for sure.
I could see that, honestly. I could see that. I feel
power differential, Nico Price's favor, ground game, probably Cowboys' favor.
But he's not gonna go for it.
Yeah.
Range strikes, Cowboys' favor.
Cowboy can wrestle though.
No, he can. I just don't think he's gonna. I don't think he's gonna shoot.
Cowboy can wrestle, but he's not like. It just depends on who he's fighting more so.
Like Nico Price is too explosive, man. Yeah. I'm worried about Cowboy, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Connor hits hard, and I'm sure Price hits hard too. And to come back from a very embarrassing loss, you know, no offense to Cowboy legend, but like Connor made it look easy. He clowned him. He literally did.
Yeah, but granted, I mean, who would we say has superior striking between Connor and Donald?
Connor, I guess. I mean,
Connor.
Yeah,
Connor, bro, Connor.
I mean, like in terms of Muay Thai, I'd give it to kickboxing. I'd give it to
no, but that's your
MMA striking.
Specifics, but striking overall striking in the cage, it's Connor, man.
It just sucks because like there are some spectacular Cerrone performances where it looks like man, this guy can really be champ, and then he just gets flatlined.
Cerrone Rick story. Best performance of his. Pop, 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 pow.
I don't know. The Jim Miller head kick was really nice too.
I just love the combo.
Poor Jim Miller.
True.
Messed up Ally Quinta.
He did mess up Ally Quinta. That's when I knew.
Al was on a run.
When I saw they booked him against Hooker after that fight, I was like, y'all just trying to get this man kicked out.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Quinta.
Yeah.
He's got Hooker next.
No, he already fought Hooker. I just knew that Hooker was gonna kick him up the same way Cowboy did.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah, of course. Hooker's friggin' savage. I didn't even know that they fought. What a cash.
That'll be a savage fight between these two.
For sure. It's gonna be a good fight. Obviously, Cowboy's Cowboy. He's gonna cowboy.
I think he'll fold, man. It's the passing of the torch. This is a fight to do it.
Yep. I agree.
But then again, he did just get beat up by a similar style in Luque. I mean, even though I think Luque is a little more explosive,
Luque has more power. I feel like too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vicente, dude, he throws hands.
Vicente's a monster too. Vicente's a legit beast.
Vicente would probably run through Cowboy, worse than Nico.
100%. Oh,
for sure. 100%. The size, the technique. Yeah. Yeah. Luque is still coming up.
That dude is just.
He's scary. He's a scary dude.
Who are we talking to? It's a podcast.
And then we got the main event.
Who's that in the background?
Main event.
It's Colby Woodley.
Oh yeah, they're fighting. I forgot.
Casual.
Honestly, I think. Colby. I know Tyron's training, and it's crazy that like
Colby
has said nothing. Colby has said nothing.
It's Colby time, bitches.
I think Colby's gonna end up fucking his shit up. And only because Woodley hasn't shown us that he's the same Woodley as before. Like he just it doesn't seem he has that same dogfight in him. Like
but there's also that small percentage chance. Well, he just says, fuck it. And just because of how much beef and stress Colby has put on him, he brings the worst version of himself. Or not the worst version of himself, the scariest version of himself to Colby. You know, the one that should have happened years ago.
I don't think Tyron has that in him. I don't think he has it in him.
You think it's gone?
I don't think he has it either. It's a dog you have. It's a dog you have as you come in. And once it starts to go away, you can't bring it back.
The only thing I would say, the only caveat to that, right? Would be the fact that he is with somebody of the likes of George that is somewhat inspiring for him to be like, hey, like you better fight like this, because if not, you're not gonna beat the guy that I've wrestled with, that I know kind of in and out. Like you're not gonna beat him the way you fought Burns.
That is kind of a secret weapon if you think about it.
No, it's not.
Masvidal? They live together. No. They train together.
All that technique stuff is fine, but if his mentality ain't there, there's none of that matters.
Yeah. But that's what I think. I think Masvidal has the chance of helping maybe Woodley hit that same switch that Masvidal did, right? Masvidal hit a switch when he did that reality show and took that time off that he said, fuck this, I'm going to finish these fights. I need to control my own destiny. I'm not going to let the judges do it for me anymore. And Woodley needs kind of that same switch, right? He needs something that's going to propel him to say, fuck this, I'm not going to – I need to put myself out there. I need to shoot. I need to wrestle. I need to use some of my wrestling. I need to fucking just be – who I was that got me to the point of being the champion and being the one of the best welterweights in his own opinion. So I think if he has that, then he'll beat him. But I just don't – that's like a – it's such a small chance that he has that, right? And he hasn't shown that he has that. So, I mean, maybe George is the difference. But if not, I see Colby just kind of doing – just running through him, man, with his endurance and with his pace and just volume.
It'll be like when Colby fought Robbie Lawler.
I was gonna say that
he's gonna take him down on the cage, and then he's gonna stand back up, and then Colby's gonna piece him up, put him back down on the ground. And he's gonna do that for 15 minutes.
Kamara did the same thing to Tyron. Just piece him up when you're worried about a takedown. Piece him up, then take him down again, over and over again.
So
it's not hard to beat Tyron. Like, you really just keep him on the cage. The entire time.
Duck is one power shot. Duck is one shot. Mm-hmm. He doesn't combo.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all kind of in agreement that most likely Tyron loses. Where does he go from here? Do you think he retires, bro?
Yeah,
right? I mean, at that point, right? If you lose to Kobe, the guy that just was shitting on you for so long.
Where do you go?
That you were shitting on.
Yeah.
I mean, he could still fight technically if he wants to fight just to fight.
Yeah,
but at that point you lost to Usman. I'm gonna echo. At that point you lost to Usman. You're not gonna beat Usman. It doesn't feel like he's getting anywhere near to beating Usman. You would have lost to Burns. Burns dogged him just like Usman did. He dogged him worse in my opinion because he really just boxed him. Mm-hmm. Then you would have lost to Colby. And if Colby does him like those two did him. How are you going to change to beat three guys that
if Tyron was able to come out and change his entire style
100%
and use his wrestling and like just take people down and then ground and pound
like he started
him, like
Tyron, I don't think he has the gas for it though.
He would murk a lot. He doesn't, but I don't think he wrestles a lot either. That's a big thing with like a lot of high level guys in like one certain part of the sport, mainly wrestlers, is they don't do as much or work on their best craft as much as they did, you know, learning wrestling. Like you come with these like D1, you know, multiple time All-American wrestlers, they're not still working on their wrestling like that much because they know it already. Right. So they're focusing on everything else.
Mm.
But if you're constantly doing this, all like Khabib, that's all Khabib does. Is wrestle and grapple.
He never changed. Yep. He never changed.
Never needed to.
Wrestle, grapple. Still, he's learning. You know, he strikes, whatever. He works on it. But the shit that got him there and why he's so dominant, he's doing it every single day. Yep. You know, people get away from that.
I guess kind of the same thing with Israel, too. Like, he's struck his whole life. He probably just kickboxes all the time just to keep it. You know what I mean? I know it's a different style set, but like.
Yeah, I mean, he was able to keep Derek Brunson off of him, you know, who has some pretty good takedowns.
Yeah. And he
was able to stuff a lot of those shots. But, you know, I think luckily his striking, for at least in Izzy's case, I think his striking he's able to kind of be a step ahead of people that are trying to shoot on him. Even though he hasn't had too many people, I think Derek Brunson was probably the only really one that was attempted a takedown on him because Kelvin didn't shoot on
him. Marvin Vettori took him down. And dominate him really a little bit,
right?
It was a good fight.
Yeah, that was like one of his best fights.
Mm-hmm. But that was what? That was early on his.
That was 2018, I think.
Like his third fight, maybe in the UFC.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny now I think about it. Right, you talked about his wrestling, right, and how he needed to work on his wrestling. You know, he was technically training with Ben Askren all those times before. I'm sure. running his wrestling, and it just wasn't enough, clearly. Like, it just...
He never used it.
It just wasn't enough. And I wonder if... And I feel like Ben probably doesn't give a fuck. He's probably like, hey, man, you do what you got to do, whatever you feel is best. But how funny is it that he's training with a guy that just flatlined him to another dimension right now for him?
He's retired, though, so I'm sure he ain't worried about
Ben, I don't even think he's training.
Ben's got a very good humor about the fact that he got, like, murdered.
Oh, that's the best way you could take a loss. Are you kidding me? Sure. Askren is the wittiest, one of the wittiest guys. Somebody
has him roasted. He has joked about coming back as well. I'm not sure how much he
his hip is done though, right? And he's
I mean he had a surgery on it though. He had a fix.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to see that, man. I was so excited.
Me neither. I'm just
he ruined all the hype that I had for him the moment I saw the Lawler fight. I was like, oh man.
Yeah, Tyron and Ben, they have so much shit going on outside of the cage. Like they don't need to be fighting anymore.
They got Ben old. They knew what they were doing when they got him.
Right.
They sent him over to one championship, and they didn't send him to one championship. They tried to send him to PFL. He's like, fuck you, I'm going to one championship. Went to one championship, fought over there. They got him after he had already retired from one championship. He was just still in their contract with one championship, because just in case he wanted to fight again. And then they picked him up or poached him for the Demetrius Johnson contract.
Yeah, they got a steal. So it's
not, it's not like they
got him when he's fine.
Yeah, if they had picked up Ben Askren right after he had beat Lima and Kereshkov, that's when I would have been impressed, because that's when Ben Askren was at his best.
Right. But he also fought Lima, who was still kind of up and coming, right? Lima was still super young, no?
They still kickbox. They just kickbox.
Yeah.
Lima's still a scary dude.
Yeah. Kereshkov kickbox still. Lima still kickbox. That's what they do. That's their style. But not that they haven't changed or gotten better with their
striking. That's what I was going to say. I was like, I feel like Lima now, though, is like just on... I felt like he's levels of where he was at before. But
possible, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he's retired for a reason, so he needs to keep his ass there.
He's retired again,
He's keeping his ass there. Did you guys see the news? Well, first off, actually, before we even get into that, Alon, now that you've enjoyed your animalist in and out, what did you think of, you know, we were raving? We were raving on your boy Billy Q, and just kind of, you know, I think the overall consensus between us was, you know, he because of his cardio and kind of the pace that he's able to kind of keep, I felt like similar to like the Spike fight, not as much where I thought this guy was going to gas out, because I thought that initially, I thought he was a really big guy like Spike, but he I guess he isn't really. And
he's still pretty big. That guy's pretty big.
Like, he is. His nickname was the Monster. But I mean, it seemed like he had a better gas tank than Spike. Spike looked like he just had one strong round in him, and then after that, he just looked exhausted the rest. But it looked like Billy, similar to Spike, just waited his time, just kept kind of picking his shots, and then was able to just set him up with that nice right hand that just hit him right in the eyeball that dropped him immediately. What did you think of your boy, and you know, how proud are you to see him kind of be on a 3-fight win streak now?
Hell yeah, I was super stoked. I was watching it here with Coach, and I was telling him, I was like, you know, Billy's a fucking stud. You know, Billy's number one attribute that he has, and most people would agree, he's not like super amazing in jiu-jitsu. He's not super amazing in striking. He's not super amazing in wrestling. But he's very durable, and he has great cardio, and he has a super strong mindset. Like, you're not going to break him mentally. So he's one of those, like, dudes that you're going to have to knock him out to finish him. He's going to be coming forward at you the entire fight. You're never going to break him. And that's one of the biggest things he has. And I don't know why Dana White said that, you know, I don't know if anybody watched the post-fight press conference, but he was saying, like, how – you know, Billy, you know, was like getting fucked up in the first round, and then he comes back, you know, figures it out and comes back round two and three to take over and then wins. I didn't think he was getting like fucked up in the first round. I don't think he was getting the better of it.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting fucked up. Like, he wasn't getting like,
I thought there was a moment where maybe he got hurt, but it was, it just seemed like he got caught and he like kind of was like, okay, and he made the adjustments that he felt he needed to just not get caught again, and that was it, you know. And maybe and that's what he was talking.
Yeah, I guess maybe. And I also like that he got a lot more striking in this fight because, you know, his last two fights have been all – obviously, Kilburn, he took him down immediately, didn't let him up, pieced him up on the ground the entire fight, submitted him. And then Spike came out. He was kind of forced to have to grapple, right, because Spike came out so wild, mm-hmm. and he was forcing these wrestling exchanges. So most of that fight – was on the ground and grappling. So you don't, we haven't really got to see Billy strike, you know, in a UFC caliber fight yet, you know, for longer than a few seconds. So, you know, I was actually really surprised that he didn't shoot. Like, he didn't shoot, like, I think, like, the entire first round almost, for the most part.
It was, he really shot in the second.
Yeah.
He got a take, I think he got a takedown in the first, the trip takedown.
He did get a takedown. It was the 1-2. And then the outside leg trip. But it was deep into the round, though. He didn't do it off rip, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's good for him, experience-wise, to get that time standing, you know, in the cage. And then, you know, once it goes to the ground and they start grappling and stuff, I told Coach, I was like, as soon as they started grappling, I was like, this dude's fucked. Like, this is Billy's world. This is where he likes to be. This guy doesn't understand, like, the type of pace that Billy will keep up. Even though Billy's definitely the smaller guy, like, you can't keep up with him. Like, you can't, like, the pressure he's going to put on you, and then he's going to keep pressing the entire time. And Kyle's a big dude, and he has a lot of muscle. I mean, that dude's pretty jacked for, like, his size. Like you said, they call him the monster. That's a lot of energy that your muscles are having to deal with. When Billy doesn't really cut a lot of weight, like, at all. Like, he cuts very little weight. He's not huge. So he's all, like, muscular endurance. Like, he's going to do that for 15 minutes at the same pace, and he's not going to slow down. And I even told Coach, you know, obviously the second round, he almost finished Kyle. I told him, I said, he's going to come out third round. I was like, he's going to finish him. I was like, he's not going to make that third round. He's not going to make it. I didn't know it was going to be like that, which that was wild. And he got on the ESPN's top 10.
Yeah, he did. Number six.
So that was pretty dope. That's awesome. You know, I know it's a bucket list for him too. You know, for everybody that watches ESPN as a kid. You know, for me when I made it, and then now for Billy, he made it. So it's pretty awesome. You know, I'm just stoked to see. I was hoping he was gonna get 50 G's, but Dana gave it to the kid that made his debut.
Kroom.
Okay. And Michelle and Angela. And then Osman for the knockout. So, okay. But he did say that he's going to give the winners some extra money. So hopefully he'll throw Billy a little bit of, you know, extra cash in there. But I'm kind of curious to see, like, what do they do with him next? Like, do they push him into the top 20? Because he's 3-0 and he's finished two of his fights.
2 of the 3.
You know, and he's going to get his new contract. So, you know, they're going to offer him that before his next fight. But I'm wondering, like, what do they do with him? Does he go top? Does he get top 20 person now? Or do they keep, like, slowly working him up?
I would say, if you see his body of work, I think stylistically, right, it has to be a fight that really – maybe he needs another guy cardio-wise that maybe is equal to see the kind of dogfight that'll be. Yeah. But yeah, he definitely deserves somebody in the top 20. I mean, his stock seems to be just going up and up. And it's crazy because you mentioned, you know, the size of Kyle and your boy not having to cut much weight. And it doesn't look like he has that much power, right? I was talking about it with the guys earlier before you hopped on, similar to like a Ferguson, right? Where Ferguson will hit you with these jabs, hit you with the striking, and it's not, you know, besides the elbows. And it doesn't look like it hurts, right? It doesn't look like it's doing that much damage. But, man, when you see these guys' faces later on, like, he's wrecking them with these soft-looking jabs that are just, you know, granted, he has massive hands, and I don't know I don't know if Billy's hands are that big, but it didn't seem like he had that much power. But, man, when he cracked them, bro, with that straight right, I mean, it was – I don't think I've seen in a while someone get hit in the orbital and just drop – face down. Like, I've seen somebody get hit in the orbital, like Josh Koscheck when he got hit with where it was kind of like he knew he was hurt and then he just kind of like folded, right? This dude straight plopped to the ground, like, fuck out of here, bro. It's a wrap.
Well, you know, a contributing factor to that, I was telling Coach and we were talking about, is that, you know, you got to think, Kyle almost got finished already, right? At the end of the second round, he almost got finished. He's already been eating all these shots. You know, like you said, Billy doesn't have that one-punch knockout power. I don't have that one-punch knockout power. It's going to be over time. So Billy's, you know, constantly just, you know, hitting him, softening him, right? Softening him up. Comes out third round. Kyle's exhausted still. He's tired. And he makes a really bad mistake and throws a leg kick unguarded, eyes closed, doesn't even see the punch coming. Because he threw the jab, and the jab hit him, and he closed his eyes kind of, and then he threw the kick, and then Billy hit him with that cross, and it put him down. That's fatigue. Not blocking the punch at all. And then Billy's adding damage up over the two rounds and almost finishing him. So he's basically primed to get knocked out. So I don't know, like, most people don't know that, like, when you've been rocked early in a fight, or even if you're just taking more damage throughout the fight, you're more susceptible to being knocked out later. It's not like, you know, your chin is 100, and then just because you didn't get rocked throughout the fight, or you got rocked in the first round, but you survived it, and then your chin goes back to 100. No, when you get rocked or you start getting hit in the face, like, multiple times over the 15 minutes, you become more and more susceptible to getting knocked out. So it's easier to knock you out in the third round than it is in the first round, for sure.
Yeah, you've been getting that makes up. Sense, especially with fatigue. If you're already compromised, you're adding fatigue on top of that. Yeah, that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense, actually.
So I'm excited for Billy. I want to see who they match him up with next. I'm so excited.
I think we all are. Right? It should be a hell of a fight.
So are you guys talking about Billy?
Yeah.
He's ranked 49 globally before the Kyle Nelson fight. Kyle Nelson was 48. Kind of ironic, but they're right next to each other. So I imagine he moves up at least 5-10 spots. There's a lot of people ahead of him, but I mean, maybe a Caceres fight or a Hooper fight. Then again, he has beef with Gavin Tucker. You know, Gavin Tucker ranked higher.
I like the Bruce Leroy fight.
I like Gavin Tucker as well. Gavin Tucker.
Literally anyone against Caceres, to be honest. But he's on a 3-fight win streak, so...
You know, but you hate Caceres, so you don't care.
I don't hate Caceres. I just... How can you be 17 and 12 and then 12 and 10 in the UFC and maintain a job? I don't care about your style. You're a decision machine. Can't even finish your sandwich.
Cowboy's 4-8 in his last 12 fights. He's still in there.
But he's got the most finishes in UFC history, so...
That's fine.
Big difference.
We're just talking about Brock.
He's like basically 0-3.
I kick him out. I mean, I kick him out like in a bad way, but I'd let him go for sure.
Yeah. Is he really 0-3? I thought he was 0-1 or 0-2 or like I thought he won one. No,
he got the other one by DQ. Yeah.
But he was losing. He was losing that fight like really bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Vargas.
Yeah.
So he's basically 0-3, and. Yeah. You know,
two rear nakeds.
The biggest thing that he had going for him was his, you know, the whole Native American thing and his whole personality. And that really only got big, you know, because of the Contender Series. And then Ariel Helwani had him on his show. And then, you know, he blew up. So that's like the whole, you know, allure of Brock. But he isn't winning and he doesn't look better from fight to fight. So it's like, how much can you put into him and keep him around? With the hopes that he's going to get better, you know.
I think right now fighters probably have a little bit more leeway because of COVID, not only because of probably maybe the understanding of like training. And this is just obviously just me fucking throwing a fucking guesstimation out there, but maybe because of the fact that because of COVID, not the training aspect, but because of the fact that there's so many fights that sometimes get canceled. That due to COVID, due to whatever injury still, you know, and kind of the bullshit that the UFC has to deal with, maybe they're keeping some of these fighters a little bit longer in case they need somebody to just step in and say, Brock, I know you fucking whatever. This guy's on coming off of a loss too. His fighter unfortunately had to drop out. We need a fighter. Would you be down? You know, that seems to me maybe why they keep some of these guys, at least as of late, why they're keeping him a little bit longer than they really need to. So
yeah,
people second chances, fourth chances.
What do you think of the Herman fight?
Oh, we went off on that. It was. I think we kind of came to the consensus that, like, we understand why he did it, right? None of us, I think, you know, none of us are, like, feel good about it. But it's, like, the guy clearly saw an opportunity, was like, oh, it's not getting stopped. Oh, he thinks he hit me in the nuts. Oh, well, I'm going to fucking – because, granted, I think he was – obviously, he was really hurt. And I think
he was about to get finished, for sure.
No, he was going to get finished.
For sure.
No, for sure. I think the biggest issue with that me and Tony were talking about was how long it took, right? How long he milked it. And I think the reason why he milked it so bad was because he was so hurt. And he literally probably needed the 4 minutes that he took to get back from the knees and the body blows that this guy, that Mike was dropping on him with those kicks. And, you know, props to him for being able to take advantage of something like that. And in the third, get a finish, right? Because it's not like he just went to a decision. He was able to somehow be able to get a land a Kimura on this kid. So for him to have, you know, kind of that presence of mind, cool. It just sucks because you see Mike Rodriguez. You know how good he is. You've seen he was dominating this fool, you know, like nobody's business. And then for him to just kind of make a simple mistake and get caught up with it, that really shouldn't have even gotten to that point because he should have had the second round finish. Just sucks. But I guess a little bit of a silver lining. He did get his purse, right? So it's kind of a, you know, he does have that L, unfortunately, which we had talked about it through text a lot, but I feel like that's something that I don't know how that works now since he got his purse.
They won't overturn it. It doesn't matter. Even if he appealed it, they wouldn't overturn it.
I don't even think they would even. Yeah, they wouldn't do anything because, for one, the ref didn't call it. He didn't like. If the ref calls it, you know, like maybe you have a chance or something. But like,
I got you.
It's like if it didn't happen in the fight, you can't go back and change it. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. It wasn't. Having some technical difficulties with Alon's connection. There he is. I think you're back now. Yes, now we can. Yeah.
I was saying it's not like you can go back and like with Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez and like change that decision because you know that was like his hand was on the ground and then it wasn't. We can look at the video, but it's like if the ref doesn't call it in the fight and there's no like action taken during the fight. You can't really go back.
Then there's nothing to – I got you. There's nothing to appeal at that point kind of thing.
Right, because how many times do people get fake kneed in the balls and then they take that time, you know? And you don't ever go back and try and, like, you know, get it overturned. You know, it is what it is. And the biggest thing I was worried about was Mike being hurt because he had that Kimura so deep. And that was the biggest thing that would suck is if, like, he tore something or really hurt his arm and now he can't be active, even though he already won that fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right.
And then I think mentally, when I was talking with Coach, I wonder if, like, because he was doing so well, right, in those first two rounds. Mm-hmm. And the third round, somehow Ed comes out, takes him down, gets on top, gets to Kimura, finishes him. Like, why did that happen? Why did that happen the first two rounds? I don't know if mentally – Or if he knew or his coaches were telling him, like, dude, you already finished that fight. Or if he's thinking in his head, man, I know that wasn't a low blow and he's milking it right now. Like, maybe mentally he got out of the fight. Like, he just
– yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't there to, like, oh, I need to stick to the game plan. I need to keep finishing him. He might have gotten out of there mentally. And then Ed Herman took, you know, advantage of it. Which sucks for, like, him because, like, Ed knows, like, you know that the cameras are watching you. Everybody, millions of people are seeing you do this, and you're really gonna try and like pass that off as like a nut shot. Like that was especially that bad. Especially that bad. Like for that long.
I think he had to sell it though. First off, Ed Herman gives zero fucks. I think if we've seen The Ultimate Fighter when he was in it, that dude never gave a fuck. Shit. But I think he had to sell it because legit, I think he was hurt, bro. He was hurt. For me, the funniest part was that you know, and we were talking about it. This guy never grabbed his balls. Like, you got hit in the – and he never once grabbed his cup until, like, after the guy stopped. Then he rolled – once he was rolled on his stomach, and then he was like, oh, he's giving me time. Oh, my balls.
Then he held his balls, yeah.
So
– you know the pain when you get hit in the balls.
And then in the interview, Bisping asked him, you know, let's address the elephant in the room. And he's like, yeah, I know I was hurt. I just couldn't tell if he hit me in the balls or in my chest. It's like, hey, bro.
I was just hurt. Like,
what do you mean?
You know – if you've got knee in the balls, you know.
Where are your balls at, bro? That's what I want to know now, because like, you don't know your balls from your chest. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
Peter Stanek said he wants to trade low blows with you.
Ooh.
Who?
The guy that got low blowed by Raymond Daniels.
Yeah.
Oh,
in Bellator.
God, his shit. That's throw-up worthy. That's a low blow.
That's for real.
He knows that he didn't get kicked in the chest, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What else? So it looks like right after this next fight night, then we have the Izzy fight versus Acosta.
We're getting spoiled.
But this card is better than that card for sure. The fight
overall for sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking. Hold up. Let me look at Adesanya Acosta. We got Dominic Reyes, John Blachowicz. That's a good little co-main. And then after Claudia is fighting
for a new king.
Jan